Today we're going to be talking about how to raise a teenager. I'm going to start us off with this. When we first started serving the teenagers, I realized that when we're worshiping, they won't open their mouth to praise and worship, and some are even laying on the ground minding their own things. When we're saying stuff to them, they will talk to each other and are unwilling to listen. I've concluded that we can't continue like this. I felt like we must solve the bitterness that's inside of them first. Whatever bitterness they may have, we need to resolve them first. Unless we get rid of this bitterness, it doesn't matter how much tender, loving care we want to give them. It wouldn't matter because they would not be able to absorb it. I wanted to find out what is going on in their mind. Why are they so rebellious? I wanted to understand them. Praise the Lord, I had the opportunity to meet with 20 teenagers, and the Lord helped them to open their hearts to me as their pastor. As we gathered in the cozy living room, I asked them, "What is causing you to be so disappointed and unhappy at home? Is it because your parents did something that caused you to be so upset and angry?" Praise the Lord that one after another, they were willing to open their hearts to share their feelings and frustrations. Today I'm here to communicate with you parents. Don't take what I'm saying here and go home to sort it out with your teenager immediately. I need you to promise me that you won't go home to work it out with them. If you can't make this promise, I'm going to ask you to stop listening and step outside. I want to start by sharing a little about my experience. When I became a Christian for 6 to 7 years, I was persecuted so much at home by my parents, and I couldn't feel their love whatsoever. I thought that they hated me, and it wasn't until later when I realized that I was wrong. When I decided that I wanted to go into full-time ministry, I wrote a 10-page letter to my father, and when I was done, I put the letter and all the savings I had in an envelope and put it on his desk before I left the house. Later that night, after fellowship, I arrived at my older sister's house to tutor her kids. When I arrived at their house, my sister told me that my dad had asked me to give him a call. I was so afraid to call because in my letter I was very bold and I've shared about all my experiences as a Christian. And the reason I was afraid was because every time I talk about my belief, I would be persecuted and beaten at home. Eventually, I picked up my courage and called home, and my older brother picked up the phone. He said that Dad and Mom read my letter, and they were both crying. They didn't want me to go into full-time ministry. My dad then picked up the phone and said to me, "Don't go into full-time ministry. I'll take you to the United States for vacation to have fun. It's okay if you want to attend fellowship, but just don't go into full-time ministry." You know, for 7 years after I've known the Lord, it was the first time I realized, wow, my parents still love me. When I was being persecuted, both my dad and mom would say stuff like, they wish I was dead, they wish that they would have killed me as an infant. They would threaten me that if I continue going to fellowship, they'll break my legs. The things that they were saying to me were very mean and very cold-blooded. I feel like they just hated me, even though I love my parents, but yet I was so distant from them because they treated me so badly, and I was scared of drawing close to them. It wasn't until that moment over the phone that I was able to experience the love from my parents again. They wanted me to listen to them, but I was afraid to comply. I didn't want to say no to God. After I got off the phone, I sat in my bed and cried till midnight. I finally knew that they still loved me. But why didn't I know? Because my parents weren't showing their emotions. Even though this was during my teenage and college years, I was not able to understand that they cared for me. After I started being in full-time ministry, I would always send letters and cards during birthdays and holidays to my parents and siblings, hoping to share the gospel. But then afterwards, I would be so afraid to go home, thinking that they would be upset and persecute me again. It wasn't until later that I found out that my dad treasured everything I've written to him, and he would keep everything in his drawer. When I served as a minister leading college and university students, I felt like a mother, and I was able to understand the heart of a mother. I looked back to the time when my parents lectured me and realized that it was out of their love they have for me. They just don't know how to express it properly, and that I really shouldn't have pushed them away and avoided them. Because of these revelations, I would tell these students that even though your parents might be mean to you, but they still love you very much, don't avoid them. I wanted to share things from a teenager's perspective. They may not be able to completely understand the love you have for them unless you are able to express it verbally. They cannot comprehend when someone says a disciplinary act is out of care and scolding is out of love. Many families are faced with tension in the atmosphere, and it doesn't matter what you say, your teenager simply won't listen. You may feel frustrated and think that they are rebellious simply because they are a teenager. But I want to tell you today that the problem is here. It's in their heart. So parents, I hope you're taking notes. Jot things down for the things that you may want to change. But please keep in mind, do not go home and confront your child. You may think that the story I'm sharing is that of your family. However, there may be another family who share the same exact situation. Don't be too quick to judge, thinking that your teenager shamed your family. If you go home and confront them, they'll completely close their heart to you, lose faith in the church, lose trust in the pastor, and it will be a downward spiral from there, and your relationship will continue to worsen. I want to emphasize this. We are extremely happy that they are willing to share and open their hearts to the pastor. If they are willing to talk about it, there is still hope in your relationship. If they are not willing to talk about it, that may mean their heart is already dead and is like a heart of stone in thinking that you will never change. And trust me, you do not want to be in that situation. As I continue to share, parents, jot things down, pray, and ask the Lord to shed light to the areas that you would need to change. It's not a time to upkeep your authoritative figure because you will only lose your teenager as time moves forward. Instead, be grateful and praise the Lord that your child is willing to talk and share what is on their heart. We hope that through this process, your teenager will be able to get rid of the bitterness in their heart and start tasting the sweetness of your love for them. Therefore, parents, be humble. Be humble. Be humble. And allow God to lead you in building and rebuilding your relationship with your teenager. Let's read from Ephesians 6:4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Here it says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. It means to not use your words to irritate them, using your words to arouse their negative emotions. Some parents have misunderstood this passage here and are unwilling to discipline their children because it says not to provoke your child to anger. So therefore, they allow their child to do as they wish. I'm going to share some real examples how parents may possibly use words to provoke anger. Some parents like to use the phrase, you're always like this, but you're never like that. Parents, stop using the phrase, you're always like this, you're never like that. By using these absolute phrases, you're concluding that they will never, never be able to change. Whenever you're dealing with a situation, keep it only to that instance. If you're lecturing them, if you can finish in 10 minutes, don't take 2 hours. They are still going to be there, but already tuned out long time ago. And later that night, they are still doing their homework, and you start lecturing them again, saying that they're wasting time and not doing their homework when you're the one that lectured them for 2 hours in the afternoon. Even though this may not always happen, however, just because it happened that one night, they will use that against you. I'm sure we don't like to be nagged by others, and as teenagers, they are even more sensitive to nagging. Parents, if you can finish rather quickly, don't lecture them longer than it needs to be by repeating yourself over and over again. Sometimes, out of your emotions in the flesh, you tell them that you're going to kick them out of the house. Do you really want to kick them out of the house? If they leave the house for a month, would you be scared and worried? Do not act out of your flesh and say anything that's not really what you had in mind. When you're lecturing them, focus on what actually happened and stop digging into the past. We as parents are also prone to mistakes, and there are going to be times where we get upset when it's not their fault. However, when they try to explain, we would shut them up by telling them not to talk back or justify themselves. Parents, if your teenager wants to explain, make sure you give them a chance to explain themselves. Raising a teenager is not the same as raising a younger child who's under 12. As a teenager, respect them like an adult, and when they want to say something, give them the opportunity to explain so you can really understand what's going on in their mind. Even though a teenager's train of thought might seem weird or strange to you, let them talk. As you may already know, as a teenager, they're just wanting to be adults already. So therefore, treat them like adults. Don't use your parental authority and try to suppress them because they will push back and think that you're not reasonable. They may try to explain a couple of times, but if they're not heard, later they may give you the cold shoulder. And eventually, they don't even want to talk to you anymore. Instead of trying to suppress your teenager in an authoritative way, be nice to them and hear them out and try to understand them. Parents, it is true when you say you reap what you sow. So when you're talking to your teenager, if you sow in the flesh, you'll reap in the flesh. If you sow in anger, you'll also reap in anger. However, if you choose to sow in love, you'll reap in love. I'm not just here to teach you how to raise your teenager. When I hear something that can be addressed on their end, I will shed some light in the situation as well. When they shared that they disliked their parents nagging, I turned around and asked them, "Why did your parents nag you?" I prompted them to think about their actions. I told them about my story, that my parents never nagged at me. Whatever they say to me, I would act upon it immediately because I'm afraid of being yelled at. For example, they told me not to leave the lights on after I leave the room, or not to slam the door. I kept them at heart and never did them. They didn't have to nag or yell at me, as there was no reason to. I'm here to help both the parents and teenagers so that there would be unity within the family and that the wall dividing the generations would be destroyed. We need to understand that sometimes it takes time to change, and we as parents need to self-examine. Are we listening to what God says and putting it into action immediately? If we're not, then why are we expecting our teenagers to be so quick to change? Did you not know that your child is like a mirror image of you, especially if they are already a teenager? If you see them misbehaving a certain way, maybe it's time for you to self-reflect and possibly repent for being the same way. A father once shared with us, when he was lecturing his 5-year-old son, his son turned around and told him, "Get yourself straightened out first." Another scenario is this. Many parents like to compare their child's academic achievements in an attempt to encourage their child to perform better in class. Your child is upset because you are comparing them only to the top of the class when in fact there are so many mediocre classmates. What's more is this. When your child complains about other siblings' privileges, such as having the latest trendy basketball shoes or other things that they are able to do, and you as a parent would tell them, no, you shouldn't compare. This is you and that is them. Parents, are you holding two sets of scales, comparing them, and yet at the same time telling them that they should not be comparing with others? This may not occur to you, but this is what is going on in their mind. Your child can see your inconsistencies. I would like to encourage you to keep this in mind. Don't expect your child to do something that you cannot do yourself. Parents, sometimes you get home from work, you would ask them, "Hey, what did you do today?" And shortly after that, you would start lecturing them about the things that they didn't do well or have not finished. I understand that your teenager may have been home and have wasted their whole day playing games and minding their own business. But don't make it your first priority to lecture them about what they were supposed to do and what they didn't do and provoke them to anger. When you see them, give them a hug and ask them, "How's your day? How are you feeling today?" Your child is very sensitive. They are very sensitive to what you care about. Do you really care about them? Do you really love them? Do you really want them to be happy? Or are you just playing cop and supervising them to see if they've accomplished their tasks? Parents, love your child in a way that they can feel loved. And once they are able to feel love and are happy and joyful, they will be able to have more self-control and self-discipline. Another teenager shared this. They were out with their friends and was running late going home. They called home to tell you that they were running late and you've told them, "You might as well just die outside and don't come back." They started thinking whether they should go home. They don't know if they were supposed to take your words seriously or not. If they go home, you're already upset and they will get in trouble. However, if they don't go home, you'll be even more upset. As they were sharing this, I thought that this was kind of funny, but at the same time, I have so much compassion for them. They don't understand that the parents were responding in the emotion of their flesh. They are literally thinking, "Should I go home or should I not?" Maybe by the time they go home, you've already forgotten what you've said over the phone. However, they can remember it very clearly. Dear parents, don't speak out of the emotions of your flesh. Your child and teenager cannot comprehend your true intention. Try to pay special attention to not hurt their feelings. Even though we should treat them, honor them, and respect them like an adult, but if they're only 13, 14, or 15, they are still very young. They don't know how to respond to the emotions and actions of your flesh, and this will cause them stress when they are interacting with you. Sometimes in the heat of the moment, you may spank them, and maybe one day, as a means to survival, they will defend themselves and strike back. There are also some of you using the Bible as a lecturing tool. You've used the passages in the Bible to tell them, "You must cut off your hand or foot, otherwise you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. How many of the Ten Commandments have you followed? Jesus is coming back. Why are you still sleeping?" Parents, we must really know what the Bible is saying and not take it out of context or use it as a book of condemnation. The Bible is a precious book that should be treasured and valued. Rather than force-feeding them and causing indigestion, you should want them to be able to receive the word happily and joyfully. You want to develop their hunger to read the word. Missionary Young's mother was an excellent role model in doing this. Even before Missionary Young was able to read, her mother would read the Bible out loud. "Oh God, how sweet are your words! They are sweeter than honey!" This stirred up her desire to be able to quickly learn how to read so that she too can taste the sweetness in the precious words of the Lord. I've shared previously in How to Raise Your Children series that parents should only discipline when the child is rebellious. Otherwise, you should praise, encourage, or entice them to do things that you'd like them to accomplish. For example, if you want them to eat something, such as vitamin C, they won't care that it's vitamin C. What you should do is eat it in front of them with this expression, "Wow, this is so good." Stir up their desire to want it. We as parents must have wisdom from God to know how to go about raising our child. Another teenager shared that he has a car that was always having issues. So whenever he gets home from school, he would spend a lot of time on his car to see what needs to be fixed. His mother then told him a story about some flowers at a pastor's house. It was a very beautiful plant, and someone once asked the pastors if they can have some of the flowers. However, the pastor said no. And then one winter, the heater broke at the pastor's house, and the plant died. She said to him, "If you care so much about your car and spend so much time on it, one day God will take it away from you." This teenager was so angry because his mother would constantly say such harsh things to provoke him. I can feel his emotion, and then I asked him, "How would you rather have her say it?" And he replied, "She could have said, 'I know the car is very important to you, but keep in mind not to spend so much time on the car more than you're spending time with the Lord. And by spending time with the Lord, He will give you the wisdom to go about fixing your car.'" I realized that these teenagers understand what was being said to them. And if they really think hard, they understand the true intentions behind what was said and also have a preference of how it was said to them. They became upset and rebellious because the way it was presented to them provoked them to anger. I believe many of you are probably in this situation. You are saying things for their own good, but they simply won't listen. We as parents are so used to saying it in a negative manner, hoping to encourage them to action. However, I want to ask you to try to understand their emotions and help them to verbalize their feelings first. You can tell them, "I know you care a lot about this car, but..." And you show them that you understand them. For example, if one day your son or daughter comes home and said the teacher was unreasonable and said something to them, instead of lecturing them by saying, "You must have been misbehaving, that's why the teacher said that," try saying, "When the teacher said that to you, you must have been so sad. Your feelings must have been hurt." Show them that you care about their feelings. Parents, if we're too quick to judge and not listening or caring about their emotions, we are provoking them to anger. Eventually, they would shut down their emotions and completely disconnect with you. You may have started off with the wrong foot and already provoked them to anger. However, it's okay. Slow down and apologize. Tell them you were wrong. Take the time and ask them, "You know my concerns. How would you have liked me to express it?" On the same note, I'm also telling your teenagers to give you some credit and understand that because you were raised up this way by your parents, and you've been showing love the best way that you know how to. It's just that some of your methods to show love needs to be tuned, and this is where I'll be playing a part. So how do we go about helping our teenagers? Parents must change first and act. When you change, I can then go back to the teenagers and say, have you seen changes in your parents? How are you responding to them? And from there, I can start teaching them. But the prerequisite is that I need you to help build my credibility. Do you know that your teenagers are praying at home for you to have ears that can listen? Parents must have listening ears in order for our teenagers to have listening ears as well. There are times that we as parents make a mistake and accidentally blame our kids, and we realize it afterwards. Don't mistakenly believe that it's okay and you can just make it up to them by other means, such as cooking a tasty meal to make up for it or pretend that it never happened. Your teenager will remember this experience and hold it against you. Parents, if you made a mistake, quickly go to them and apologize. You must know that the more you apologize when you've made a mistake, the more they will respect you. Your teenager needs to respect you as their parents. They won't respect you or love you simply because you're giving them allowances. You need to be worthy of their respect. As a parent, when you're humble and can acknowledge your own fault and apologize, you're showing them that you're being responsible for your actions and faults. You're setting an excellent role model for your teenagers. There are also times that you ask your teenagers to help do the dishes, mow the lawn, or watch after their younger siblings. When you asked, they helped. But at the end of the day, not only did you not thank them for their assistance, you picked on the quality of their work and criticized them. Parents, thank them first for what they've done. Acknowledge their contribution first before you give them tips on what can be done better. For example, after thanking them for doing dishes, you can say, next time when you're washing dishes, you can do this to clean the dishes so the dishes will no longer be greasy. Parents, praise and thank your teenagers for their help, and then let them know what they can do to improve. There are some teenagers that told me that they do not want to attend youth fellowship, but was forced to attend, and if they don't attend a fellowship, you would give them a hard time about it. Similar to what I've shared earlier, if there are things that you would like them to do, develop their appetite and entice them to want it for themselves. Attending fellowship should be a pleasant gathering, and it shouldn't be something you're forcing them to. If you force them to attend fellowship, even if they're physically there, they wouldn't be happy. Instead, ask them, why do you not want to go? Take the time to be patient with them and develop their desires for fellowship. This concept goes the same way for after-school programs or activities that you may be signing them up for, such as piano lessons, swimming lessons, etc. Your teenager may not be interested in the program or activities, so therefore their heart is not there to learn or to excel in these activities. And when this happens, you lecture them about wasting the money that you've invested in them. From their perspective, they didn't ask for this, and now they are getting in trouble for not being good at something that wasn't their desire to begin with. So the question is this: how do you entice them or develop their appetite for these things? Let's put this principle in action. For example, when you take them to a friend's house and if they see their friends playing the piano very well, you can then say, wow, that is so beautiful. Would you like to learn to play the piano too? If you behave, then I'll sign you up for piano lessons. Let them value and treasure the things that you're signing them up for. When they're not doing well, encourage them to practice a little bit more. Use positive words instead of negative ones. Don't use money to promote the activity because they will feel like all you care about is how much money has been spent and not caring about them as a person. This will not yield the desired outcome and can cause disappointment and tension between you and your teenager. One more thing, your teenagers are very smart. They know that if they apologize quickly, they can skip the never-ending lecture, and they can reduce the amount of discipline received. However, this should not be your goal to raise a Pharisee where they are obeying on the surface level, but deep down inside, they are still rebellious. In my sharing on how to raise your child, I've talked about the 5 steps to disciplining your child. If you have not heard it before, make sure you go back to listen to them. It says in Proverbs 13:24, whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. If you're going to discipline them, use the rod of discipline. This can be the shape of a thin wooden rod, and you should be hitting the palms of their hands where it hurts. Make sure you're following the 5 steps very closely and not skipping or missing any steps. I want to illustrate raising a child with the planting of a tree. When a gardener is planting a tree, sometimes due to external factors, the tree would grow whichever way they choose to. One way to make sure the tree is growing straight, a gardener would use a method called staking, where they would stake a rod that is firmly stabilized in the ground and tie the young tree to it to serve as a guide for the tree to grow. The stakes are rules and principles that are laid out ahead of time and is to be followed strictly to the T. If your child breaks the rule, tell them that I've already told you that rules must be kept, and if the rules are broken, you would be disciplined. Pick up the rod and discipline them. In my sharing, I've mentioned hitting the palms of their hands one time with the rod of discipline. Hit it quick so it hurts, so it serves as a memory to your child to not break the rules and principles again in the future. If they break it again the second time, hit them 2 times, and so on and so forth. Parents, be firm about the rules and principles that you've set and discipline your child according to what has been laid out. Do not waver about the rules and wait till your child crosses the line too far and then lash out in your fleshly anger. Some parents will scream and yell at their child, and this is because they have not been consistently disciplining their child on the spot. And when anger reaches boiling point, parents respond in the flesh, and this is where it causes the most damage in a child's upbringing. Did you know that studies have shown that a child hates it the most when their parents are screaming at them? Furthermore, do not slap them in the face or use your belt to spank them. Not only does it not speak love to them, you are acting out of your flesh and shaming them, which creates greater problems down the line. Follow through on the 5 steps to discipline and help them to live a disciplined life. Parents, keep this in mind. You will only grow older and weaker while they grow bigger and stronger. If they are already bigger than you, or if they've been disciplined too much when they were young and their skin has grown thick, the only way to melt the hardness in their heart is to hug them, praise them, encourage them, and show love to them. One other thing, I want to briefly talk about money. If you haven't already, give them some type of allowance and teach them to manage their money and finances. Teach them that if they want to buy something with a higher price tag, they would have to delay their gratification for a bigger purchase. If they have already saved up their money to make the purchase, don't prevent them from using it. Parents, the money that you've already given them is theirs to spend. Release your control over that money. And yes, I know, teenagers will possibly buy things that are not practical, but you must respect them and not lecture them because they bought it with their own money. On the same note, some teenagers have shared that you have taken the money that is their savings account to purchase stocks, or that you have taken their red envelope money to pay for their tuition. Dear parents, what's been given to them, it's theirs. If you want their buy-in, you must entice them to willingly release that money to you. If you're facing financial difficulties, tell them about the burden and discuss it with them like an adult and respect them. You should no longer force your authority upon them and expect them to be okay with it. There are also times where your teenager wanted to buy something and you originally said no, but a couple of months later you change your mind and decide to buy it for them. However, when you are buying it, you tell them, I'm going to buy it for you so you can see for yourself if it's really worth spending this money. By adding that language, you've discouraged them and you've lost the deposit of love you're originally going to make. This is not a battle to see who's right and who's wrong. Parents, we need wisdom from God to speak wisely. If you're already spending the money, stop using words to provoke them to anger. In addition, don't tell them that when you were young, you would only spend pennies on the dollar to buy something, whereas they're spending a lot more to buy the same thing. Times are different now, and there is also inflation that needs to be taken into account. You might just be saying it for comparison purposes, but they would take it at face value and get angry. Parents, if you continue to provoke them, chances are your teenager can't wait till they are in college to be as far away from you as possible. I'm sure none of your parents wants this to happen, and the only way to reverse this is to win back their hearts with love. Going back to the staking of a tree example, you can't force correct something that has already been matured. When they are still young, you stake them to rules and principles so they can grow and mature properly. If they are not growing the right way when they are young, don't ignore it because you think that is not a big deal or that you're too busy to discipline them. By the time they have already grown a certain way, trying to correct this by force will break them. You must soften their hearts with love. Bring them back in slowly, little by little, so that it can be straight again. I'm going to switch gears and talk a little about academics and schools. Some of you have told your teenagers, if they have any questions, come and ask you. When they come and ask you, you would lecture them by saying, "How come you're not paying attention in class? This is so simple. I've learned this in grade school. How is it possible that you don't understand this?" Hearing these conversations, I feel so much compassion for both sides. Many of you parents were the top of your class, and you expect the same thing from your teenagers, but it's not the same for them. Did you know that there's a different home atmosphere from parents who came from more rural areas? They'll exclaim, "Wow, my son can write! He can even read English!" Completely different from families with high expectations, where it's more common to hear, "Why did you get an A instead of an A+? Or even, "Sure, the rest are A's, but what's this B+? Why didn't you just put in a little more effort and then you'll have all A's? Why didn't you just work harder?" Why is that? It's because these parents are too accomplished and they wish their children are like that as well, causing them extra stress at home. So often I find that families from rural areas are much happier and have less stress. There's less high expectations for them. Maybe even, "You don't need to go to school, just help with the fields at home today." As a result, these teenagers are emotionally healthier and value their opportunities to learn more. Dear parents, your role in this relationship is to raise your teenager with a godly value system while they are young. Because every day, the education system strongly teaches them to value their individuality and the freedom to do anything they want, whenever they want. Once they reach their teenage years, they look around and it seems like everyone is taking drugs, getting pregnant, having abortions, just to name a few. There's layers and layers to their stress that you cannot see. So once they get home, what they need is love and understanding, not strict demands and expectations. They need you to be a support, a friend that can help them face these conflicting values. I'm going to end with this, parents. Set yourself as an example for them to look up to and seek wisdom from the Lord so that you do not provoke them to anger and that you may bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord.